Charlotte Talks is sponsored by Mazda of South Charlotte, committed to bridging the gap between adventure and adventurer by helping people select vehicles that fit one's lifestyle. More at MazdaofSouthCharlotte.com. This is Charlotte Talks. I'm Mike Collins. Early voting is underway in a midterm election we keep being told is the most important of our lifetime. And this time, there may actually be an element of truth to that, given that the control of both the United States House of Representatives and the GOP supermajority in the North Carolina General Assembly hangs in the balance. This hour, we're going to explore the possibilities of both and what it would mean if voters ask for change and what it means if they do not. If there's something resembling a blue wave, would things really change? Or would we experience the same kind of divided government with a slight tilt in a different direction? Would that wave result in a different kind of government or more of the same? And if voters favor the status quo, what will that lead to in the coming months and years? We've taken over the Booth Playhouse in Founders Hall for this discussion. We have a live audience here. Who we have encouraged to be civil as we talk about the most uncivil of all topics, politics. And we've said that if anything we talk about bothers you, angers you, enrages you, thrills you, then take that energy and vote. We have representatives of both political parties on the stage for the hour, and I'll introduce them in alphabetical order by last name in order to be fair. Wayne Goodwin is chair of the North Carolina Democratic Party. Robin Hayes is chair of the North Carolina Republican Party. Connie Green Johnson is president of the Democratic Women of Mecklenburg County. Sarah Reedy Jones is vice chair of the Mecklenburg County Republican Party. And Dr. Michael Bitzer is political science and chair of the Department of Politics at Catawba College. Welcome to you. So, I want to go down the row of people associated with political parties and just get a quick yes or no answer. Is this the most important midterm election of our lifetime, Wayne?
Yes.
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 Absolutely yes.
Why?
I think you just said that. We're at stake with the supermajority here in North Carolina. We're at the stake of control of the House and the Senate. This is the reality that midterms tend to swing a certain way, and so that is why the premise of this blue wave, and so we're just hoping that maybe we can prevent that a little bit.
Robin Hayes, why?
Because there's never been such a difference between the two parties. At this point, you get to choose between jobs and mobs.
Connie.
I think you need to recruit a few more Republicans for your show, Mike.
Connie.
Well, I think it's the most important because I think if we would have a blue wave, we could bring some civility back to the state of North Carolina. This gross separation where folk are not being governed. We are not being governed because most of the majority is fighting just to keep power. And that's not a good government. That's not a democracy.
Wayne Goodwin, why?
As chair of the Democratic Party, I will tell you that the reason this is the most important midterm election in our lifetime is because there are so many things we have relied upon as citizens that are being either reversed or threatened to be eliminated. So security has been threatened to be cut. Medicare, Medicaid, we're seeing our foreign policy being shredded. We're losing our good name across the globe. And we're seeing a lot of the things that we have relied upon for our children and grandchildren, clean water, clean air, and the like, up in the air. And that is very disturbing and angering. And I hope that we have a very clear decision at the voting booth this year.
Excuse me for smiling, Mike, but I've been in this business for a long time.
Sorry, what?
I have been an elected official for a long time. Wayne and I have been friends for a long time. He knows as well as I do that when I was on the city council in the 70s, this is the same scare tactic that has no relevance to the lives that we live. Well, if Social Security were going to be taken away and Medicare, it would have been long gone by now. So let's raise this up a little bit.
As long as we're talking about scare tactics, let me get Michael Bitzer into this because he's the nonpartisan viewer here. As long as we're talking about scare tactics and what's at stake in this election, is it mobs or jobs? Is that what it is, or is that a scare tactic?
Well, modern politics today is all about anger, fear. If you can threaten the other side or threaten your base or get somebody fired up to say, we don't like this other party because whatever, that has become now the norm of our politics. It is unfortunately what we call in political science affective polarization. I hate the other party, so I'm going to go out and vote, rather than I support my party, I want my candidates to win. It's unfortunate. It's part of our polarization. I think what you have heard from the representatives of the political parties is a perfect example of where we see this divide and oftentimes the perspectives and the viewpoints that neither side can necessarily agree on.
I'm not going to ask you how we got here. I'm going to ask you why we got here, because there have been Democrats and Republicans for a very long time. And before that, there were Whigs and God.
Federalists, anti-federalists.
So have we been here before where each side hates the other, can't talk to the other, can't live in the same house with the other? And how did we get out of that?
We have been in this situation before, Federalists versus anti-Federalists, the Civil War, 1968. The anger and the resentment and the concerns and the negativity is there because of us, because of individuals, because of human behavior. I unfortunately do not know how we get out of this unless people are willing to acknowledge the other side, to say that there is a sense of compromise. Mm-hmm. I'm not going to get 100% of what I want. That's compromise. And I don't think that we necessarily have that because the parties have sorted themselves. We used to talk about Southern conservative Democrats and Rockefeller Republicans. They don't exist anymore in today's political environment.
Robin Hayes, you were in Congress what years? 1999 till
98 till 2009.
Was it different then?
It was. There were a lot of disagreements about policy issues, but we had more time to get along. And just to kind of counter what Professor Bitzer said, we had a wonderful experience recently. The RNC in the 2020 Republican Convention chose Charlotte. And it was because a tremendous number of citizens, some in the political arena, business, the arts, they came together. Mayor Vi Lyles, and she's been criticized soundly by some, put an approach together. It wasn't just about compromise. It was about working together, showing what spirit exists in Charlotte and in North Carolina, so that people coming here and the 15,000 press credentials, which will be issued around the world, which is 10,000 more than the Super Bowl, by the way, can show who we, as Charlottians, Mecklenburg, surrounding counties, South Carolina, are. And again, these kind of things are happening. Don't want to take a shot at the drive-by media, but they'd rather not write about planes landing. So I don't think that got the coverage in terms of people getting along that it should. Really had a great experience.
So a Washington Post survey shows that most voters have a favorable view of one party and a negative view of the other. But 10% say they dislike both parties, while voters in that group say they prefer the Democratic candidates in their districts by 15 points. Wayne, does that put a smile on your face?
Well, I was attracted to being active in politics and to public service because of the hope and faith in our country and our state. And I still believe that we can return to what we have been, and that is working together. But it is for a lot of reasons. We have seen the hyper-partisanship magnified. I mean, with all due respect to Chairman Hayes over there, I mean, he mentioned jobs and mobs first. I was not going to go there. But unfortunately, we have seen, because of the changes in our lifestyles, changes in our way we view media, there's fewer media and more media at the same time, and folks are in their own respective silos. And unfortunately, it's made things hyper-partisan. And it's very disheartening as someone who, I think all of us are here for the right reasons, but we are being pushed and pulled by forces that I hope we can get a hold of ourselves, or it's going to tear us apart.
All politics is supposed to be local, and it certainly starts at the local level. So let me talk about to the chairs of the local parties here, Sarah and Connie, about why people get into politics. Why are you in politics? What's the end game? Why? What's the overarching reason for you even being interested in it? Because it's a dirty game. It's always going to be. Why? What are you trying to achieve?
Absolutely. I'm a 5'1" girl. I can't get too dirty and scrappy. But what I like to do is fundamentally think that at the end of the day, that the Republican policies will advance our country forward. And I'd like to have that idealistic idea that that libertarian side, that kind of leave us alone, give us those fiscal abilities to grow and to be private citizens and to make our country a better place. And so we try to make it as local as possible here in Mecklenburg County. The fact that we have fielded people to run for all of our offices here locally is a huge step. The fact that we have people that believe in a spectrum of things, that we have a 25-year-old female running for state senate, that we have just such a variety of people that genuinely believe in the Republican fundamentals, and they feel that their way, at the end of the day, advances their causes more.
So, Connie, I hear idealism from your Republican counterpart. Why are you doing this?
The reason Connie Green Johnson is involved is because I honestly believe, and maybe I'm naive, that our government should be about the people, for the people, and by the people. I honestly believe that. I moved to North Carolina because I have some marvelous grandchildren, and I want them to come back after being in college, being part of this state. When I'm relocated to North Carolina in 2006. It was a progressive state. And I didn't see the divide as much as I see it now. And just the fact, or the conversation that that one party, because I do honestly believe in a two-party, three-party system. I think that's what America is all about. But when you have a party that really thinks of another party as a mob, that in itself creates a real negative kind of approach to the thought process. I know that I'm not a mobster or a thug, and I don't want, but.
So Michael, where is this?
But I wanted to say something else.
Okay, very quickly.
Can I?
Yeah, sure.
Like, for instance, I was really upset about the RNC 2020 coming to Charlotte, not because you're a Republican, because what I saw in Charlottesville. I was more bothered by that I didn't want Charlotte to be the city that would be destroyed because of all of the issues that happened. This young innocent girl got killed. And then someone that is in leadership says that there were good people on one side and bad on the other. That's ludicrous.
We have a minute left. How did we go from the fifth grade civics lesson and what politics is about in America from Sarah to this mean-spiritedness being referenced by Connie over here about things that actually did happen? She's not making this up. How did we get here? Why are we so angry?
I think a lot of it is about we have sorted ourselves into like-minded communities and like-minded parties. There's a lot of ideological coherency within both the Democratic and the Republican Party nowadays, but we also tend to talk to people that think and vote like us, and we don't get out of our bubbles.
And things have gotten substantially meaner, and when we come back, we'll talk about that aspect of politics today as we head into the midterms on Charlotte Talks from the Booth Playhouse. Charlotte Talks is sponsored by Mazda of South Charlotte, committed to drivers that believe a car is used for more than just getting from place to place. More at MazdaofSouthCharlotte.com. It's Charlotte Talks on Listener Funded, 90.7 WFAE and 90.3 WFHE. I'm Mike Collins. We're at the Booth Playhouse tonight for a discussion in front of a live audience about the state of American politics. As we head into the midterms, I want you to know, those of you listening at home, that in the break, Robin Hayes, the chair of the North Carolina Republican Party, was in a civil conversation for at least a minute with Connie Green Johnson, president of the Democratic Women of Mecklenburg County. They're both up here, along with Sarah Reedy Jones, vice chair of the Mecklenburg County GOP, and Wayne Goodwin, chair of the North Carolina Democratic Party, and Michael Bitzer, who's with the Catawba College. Our politics have gotten, it seems, at least to me, substantially meaner over the last several years, with one side warning that a victory by the other side would be the worst thing in the history of the Republic. President Trump has said, and I quote, "Democrats want to raise your taxes and impose socialism. They want to take away your health care, destroy the Second Amendment, and throw open the borders to deadly drugs and vicious gangs. Democrats," he says, "have become the party of crime." In 2008, Robin Hayes asserted that liberals hate real Americans that work and accomplish and achieve and believe in God. When politicians...
May I correct the record?
Sure.
That is not what I said.
But I've read all these corrections
liberals
back and forth.
Hate it when people go to work and worship God and do the things that they need to do. I don't hate anybody. I recommend that anybody eliminate that from their vocabulary. It's a word that has no place in our society. And again...
So tell me what you said again.
I said, in a joking manner,
okay,
at a McCain rally, that liberals hate it when folks go to work and have jobs and go to church and go hunting and do things like that.
Okay.
There's a lot of difference in saying, I hate liberals. Okay. Which
I don't think I said that. I said that you said liberals hate real Americans that work and accomplish and achieve and believe in God. All right, let's leave it at that because we're splitting hairs. So, Michael, is it helpful to the cause of America when things like that are said? Because Democrats have probably said equal things about Republicans.
No.
No?
Not like that. No. Wow.
I stand corrected.
Yeah.
Audience has
much
pitchforks.
Worse, Mike.
Audience has pitchforks. Yeah. Go ahead, Michael.
I think anger is helpful for mobilization and energizing, and putting a sense of fear has become the new predominant motivator in our politics. And it is unfortunate. It is destructive of the ideals of trying to make a more perfect union. We recognized early on with the founding that we could never create a perfect union. We say a more perfect union. And I think the danger in today's politics is that both sides are trying to create their perfect union to the exclusion of the other side.
So I want to hear from Connie and Sarah on this. And you can tell me whether you believe that politicians actually believe the things like President Trump has said that I just quoted. Do they actually believe those things? And if they do, is there a future in America? And if they don't believe those things, aren't they doing incredible damage to the country by saying them? Connie, go ahead.
I think that most of, whether it's they have an R or a D, I really don't think basically people are bad. I'm a product of an ethnic group that was part of slavery. And if everybody was that had slaves or even looked different, didn't help Sojourner Truth to bring folk to a free area of the United States, then we would not be where we are today. We would still be slaves, maybe. So I don't think the Republicans are bad folk. I don't think the Democrats. But the point that I'm worried about is that we have moved so far to this divide of them against them that we cannot pull back. But I'm positive in that as president of the Democratic Women, women have a tendency to do what? To be able to, we don't have as much testosterone, so we can sit down and we can have a meaningful discussion between this young lady and myself. I hugged her tonight because just the fact that there was another female in the room other than these men. So I felt comfortable about doing that.
Connie, I don't.
So, So what I want to say,
I don't think that answered my question. Your politicians are so good at not answering questions. Do you think that politicians believe what they say? Okay, you do not believe that.
No.
Do you believe that the president believes what he's saying when he says these things? As a Republican, do you believe it?
I believe that President Trump has done an amazing job of mobilizing people in a way that we've never seen before. Whether or not I personally agree with him on things all the time, what I do see is an anger, and I agree. And I agree with Dr. Beitzer's comments that this anger is mobilizing people. We see this anger. We see the anger with the Kavanaugh confirmations.
But he's causing the anger. Does he believe the things he says?
I believe that we were walked, that we come into here to try to have that conversation with you, to try to show why people rally behind him and why they want to see something different, why they like that he's not speaking like the average politician, why he doesn't have that track record of having been an elected official, that he's bringing something different. And I think that this is a crowd that I knew I wasn't going to necessarily win hearts and minds with, but you do that because you want to show that there are people that really do believe in doing something bigger and different than has been done before.
Yeah, but that doesn't answer the question.
Nothing will ever answer the question.
I mean, the question is not that he's accomplishing great things, because in Republicans' eyes he is, and maybe some of the things he's accomplishing will even come to be seen by Democrats in the future as having been worthwhile, okay? But when you stand up in front of a crowd, and he does this regularly now, these rallies, and you say incredibly negative things about Democrats, much of which can be proved to be demonstrably false, do you think that he believes that? And if he doesn't believe it, if he's just doing it to rile up the base, is that helpful to the Republic? Is it not damaging to the country?
I think there's a lot that's going on right now that could be construed. I think that I want to ask that question to Senator Feinstein, if she believed that when she went into doing these hearings.
Well, what did she say? What did she say?
The fact that she threw that lady under the bus, that the fact that you're seeing people angry and mobilized, and the fact that you are seeing a bounce in the Republican voters.
So you're referring to Christine Blasey Ford at the Kavanaugh.
I'm referring to that entire debacle. I'm referring to that. Let's talk about the fact that there are instances on all across the aisle of people that are just going to extremes and that are just completely marginalizing everything, and it's really a shame. And I knew that the crowd would start booing, and that's disappointing. So I hope that we can have an elevated conversation.
Okay, now I've asked everybody to be civil out here, and I want to be able to hear the responses here, because this is not going to be a rally. Yes, Connie, go ahead.
I'd just like to add that your president, my president, Donald Trump, is a TV celebrity, and it's about plan those kind of tactics in order to rile up the base in terms of creating fear in groups that feel like they have been disenfranchised. But I cannot believe that you, as a female, would really agree with a lot of what our president says about women.
I'd like to speak to that, actually. I'd like to speak to that, because a couple of weeks ago I went public for the fact with the Kavanaugh hearings that it was marginalized, that men, you know, were the enemy in these things. And a friend of mine was personally attacked and told that I was that he was misogynistic because he supported this confirming Kavanaugh. The fact is, a couple of weeks ago I went public with the fact that in 2003 I was drugged and raped, and that I am a rape victim, and that I still supported the confirmation of Kavanaugh. I think that it is time that we stop identifying women, that I be identified for body parts. I think it's important that I can separate what I think is fact versus fiction, and that I can believe in something, and that I don't have to be told that I have to believe in something because I'm a female, that I have to be Democrat or this or that, that I can have a strong opinion as a Republican female. So I'm sorry.
I want to come back to the Kavanaugh hearings, but I want to warn you, Connie, that it's 7:31, and I know you have tickets to Hamilton, and you have to go, because they start in 3 minutes. Okay. So I'm going to let you go, and I will thank you for being here.
I appreciate
it. Connie Green Johnson is the president of the Democratic Women of Mecklenburg County. I want to come back to the Kavanaugh hearings a
little
bit later.
I'm going to give Connie my card. She can call and talk to me anytime about anything.
So, Wayne, you have said that Democrats in North Carolina are angry and fed up, and they want to fight in every district. Your party held power in North Carolina for 100 years, and the Democratic Party pretty much held the United States government as well since the 1930s on. They don't anymore, pretty much anywhere. What did you do wrong?
Well, as perhaps the professor will provide some illustration, the parties back then are not the parties of today. The Democrats of yore are the Republicans, the Dixiecrats, and the current Republicans now, and both parties have flipped their respective positions. And so it's not really, I think, fair or correct to compare then and now. But we should talk about now and tomorrow. And I am so excited. I know we've been talking about negative stuff here. I want to talk about some positive stuff.
Okay.
I am so excited and inspired that the Democratic Party of North Carolina has set some historic numbers here with the number of women that are running for the legislature. We have 65 candidates for women. We have 54 candidates that are persons of color that are running. We have 7 candidates that are LGBTQ. We have a diverse slate of candidates that reflect North Carolina. And I think both parties are better off, and our state and nation are better off, when the two parties reflect our people and not divide our people.
So, Robin Hayes, not only were you in Congress at a kinder, gentler time, you're old enough to remember when Democrats and Republicans could actually argue on the floor and then go out to dinner with each other and have a good old time, and that key leaders in both the House and the Senate in Washington were friends. They were personal friends, even though they were Republicans and or Democrats. Before the 2016 election, you referred to that contest as the Republic's last stand, fretting about the survival of the country and the state unless Republicans were elected. You're not alone in saying those things. Democrats say those things, too. Why do those things have to be said?
I'm not at all remembering the context, so it's a little bit awkward, but I will say that a chair of the party is elected to be a partisan representative.
Yes, but to say that if we don't win, ladies and gentlemen, if you don't vote for us, we're going down the tubes.
Did I say that?
No, but that's what it's the the Republic's last stand. Yes, you did.
Well, if you want to take a conservative last stand, if you let the other side take over and their platform is dramatically different from ours, then it is your last stand until another election. Remember.
What do you see as the most dramatic differences?
The most dramatic differences, I have no idea. But I know every time I've been elected, whether it's State House or Congress, I was running in a Democrat district.
Okay.
Unequivocally. And I got along and got elected because I represented the people that lived in that district. That is the possible missing ingredient that people who are now elected need to refresh themselves on. Their representation of their district is the most critical part of their service, not just a blind loyalty to whichever party to take them where they want to go. But there has been a dramatic change, an escalation. Sarah talks about the Kavanaugh hearings. We cannot get away from that. That was a situation where professional prosecutors took the rule of law, reversed it 180 degrees. Now you are guilty until proven innocent. Now, if you think about a last stand, people who have a minority position, regardless of what it is, if we reverse the rule of law and consider them guilty unless we prove them innocent, that is a radical. Wayne didn't like my mobs or jobs.
How about reasonable versus radical? Sarah, I know you were very emotional when you talked about it. So I'd like to hear, in what way was the rule of law turned on its head? Was innocence until proven guilty flipped just because we had a hearing on it?
Well,
Well, first of all, I think if we want to talk, if this whole thing is about being a more civil, how do we get to a more civil America? I think the way that the entire thing was handled was crazy. I, you know, back to my idealistic days, I was a Capitol Hill intern, and I got turned away one day because I had open-toed shoes. And yet now people can come in walking in wearing crazy costumes and theatrics and just kind of making so much noise around something so sacred and so important as a hearing.
And you're referring to the people in the gallery now?
Just in general, yeah. I think the disruptors, mobs versus jobs is catchy, but I think there's a lack of that respect of going into Capitol Hill and respecting the process. And I think that, frankly, every side failed when it came to the Kavanaugh hearing.
If you're referring to people marching on the Capitol and people actually in the hearing shouting out during the hearing, I've never seen any behavior quite like that myself. But can't the blame for that be put on the rhetoric that's coming from politicians? Period.
I think so, and I think what you also see is I think you really scare a lot of good people out of wanting to put their name on the ballot, of wanting to serve as a judge, of wanting to serve in some sort of public official level. I think that people are so afraid now that they're going to be torn to the wolves, and that this innocence until guilty, guilty until innocence. I think that it's a really scary precedent, and I think you're really dissuading a lot of people from wanting to get involved in the process.
Michael, is that what happened? Do you see her point? I guess that's my question.
I always tell my students that to serve the public is oftentimes the highest calling that one can give, whether you serve in a military uniform, whether you serve in elected office, whether you serve the public in a variety of professions. I think that what we need to remember always is that these people are putting themselves forward for that public service, and that oftentimes our partisan lenses color our judgment, color our rhetoric, color our feelings about a particular individual, to the point where we truly can't see. And until we are willing to take off those blinders that has become so much of a part of the norm, I tell my students, this kind of behavior, this kind of activity was not the norm.
And with that, we must stop. From the Booth Playhouse, it's Charlotte Talks. We'll be right back. From the Booth Playhouse in Founders Hall at Charlotte Talks on WFAE and WFHE, I'm Mike Collins. Dr. Michael Bitzer is with us, chair of the Department of Politics at Catawba College. Wayne Goodwin is the chair of the North Carolina Democratic Party. And to his left, oddly enough,
small matter perspective.
Is Sarah Reedy Jones, vice chair of the Mecklenburg County GOP, and Robin Hayes, chair of the North Carolina GOP. I want to move into state politics in a second, but before we do that, you brought up the word hope a minute ago off the air, Wayne Goodwin.
Yes, sir.
And Sammy on Twitter writes, "I remember the Obamas and hope. That was always at the center of their campaign. It worked. Why don't Democrats embrace that anymore?"
We do embrace that, but unfortunately, the tenor and timber and all the different messages out there, unfortunately, are drowning what should be a hope-filled message. I am hopeful. Our party is hopeful. We're talking about clean air, clean water, better jobs, better schools, talking about opportunities for all. And unfortunately, these days, it seems like what gets covered, whether by the media or by folks in politics or by candidates, are really examples of hypocrisy. And we get so distracted by the hypocrisy out there, it's tearing people away from what should be a great opportunity for the American experiment to be practiced once again. I mean, we should be celebrating the common elements between our parties and among our people. And with what's happening in Washington, I won't say trickled, it has poured down on Riley in this state, and our politics is really at its lowest point I've seen in a long time. But I believe that we can turn it around, and through community conversations and by finding common elements among us and focus on that, we can have hope.
And when you say turn it around, are you talking about the tenor of the conversation, or are you talking about the makeup of the House and Senate and the State General Assembly?
I think both. I mean, you know, if you're talking about, you know, the U.S. House or the North Carolina House, either one, I mean, there's been lots of coverage about gerrymandered districts and how they don't necessarily reflect the populace. We are a purple state. We're a divided country. But that should help us work together, not tear us further apart.
Right.
You know, in business, if you have folks of differing opinions, you try to find things that work together. And so I think turning it around means not only turning around the politics of it, but turning around how we approach these election cycles. And maybe I'm just an idealist. And yes, I've been around a good while too, but I still believe in hope. I still believe in how and why we were founded as a nation. And I think that when it all comes said and done, we are all Americans, we're all North Carolinians, and that if we just focus on what unites us, then that's turning it around.
And I would wager Robin Hayes and Sarah Reedy Jones that you would echo those comments, would you not? You still believe in hope?
Absolutely. Hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men are created equal. The uniqueness of our experiment, which is 280-some years old now, was a complete reversal of the monarchy, the dictator. Here, we said God empowers all of our citizens to elect representatives in a republic to then decide how we will order our lives together. That's what Charles Colson said politics should be, and that's where we need to be. And as I think through any of the different challenges and opportunities that I face, that's at the heart of it. How can we, as political figures, revert to a neighborhood mentality where our deeds, not our words, demonstrate how much we care and we have a responsibility because of our endowment to reach out and do the right thing, straighten ourselves out. If we govern ourselves, then we can govern and help the person next to us. That's my view of the world.
So let's bring this down to North Carolina. To break the Republican supermajority in the General Assembly, Michael, Democrats need to flip, I think, 4 seats in the State House or 6 seats in the Senate to break the supermajority. Is that doable? And then maybe you ought to explain the supermajority versus the simple majority.
Right. Well, supermajority is the number of seats in both chambers to override a governor's veto. So right now we do have divided government. The governor is a Democrat. The legislature is controlled by Republicans. If you can break the supermajority, you can basically prevent the legislature from overriding the governor and doing what they want to do. And I think that in today's environment, it is a possibility that one of the chambers will at least lose that supermajority status. I am very doubtful that either chamber would flip at this point. I think North Carolina...
So what happens then? If they don't change, if the Republicans
That's
still control things,
right.
But they don't have a supermajority, which means they can no longer immediately override the governor's veto, what happens then?
One of two options. The two branches of government work together, or they don't. And that's going to have to be an interesting concept in this whole principle of, dare I say again, compromise.
Okay. Is compromise possible?
Absolutely.
Absolutely.
Yes. I mean, whenever
what issue would you be willing to compromise on? Name one.
Well, here's
coastal resources. How we manage our coastal resources, both the land, the water, and the fish, shellfish, finfish. That is a wonderful place.
A lot of our local candidates have really got a good bent on judicial reform. I think you can see that really, especially a lot of the younger candidates. That's something that I think we could work together across the aisle on.
I believe that there are a host of issues if folks are willing to sit down together. And I believe that when Democrats break the supermajority in one of the chambers, I believe they will, that there will be an opportunity for more people to be at the table to decide what we agree on. And I think part of the compromises can be on where we spend our money and how much we spend our money in our budget and the other things. But I think also where you will see a lot of folks come together. I know that, you know, I'm not sure where Congressman Hayes is on this, but I know that there are many Republicans who would like to see an independent redistricting commission. And that's something where we can work together.
I didn't quite hear. Have a redistricting committee?
Independent redistricting commission. That there are Republicans.
Now, are we going to, in this atmosphere, we're going to bring in from Mars or how do you find this independent? That's a wonderful.
We had
idea.
At least five in the audience.
I like the sound of it.
It's
but
another
until
state.
We figure out exactly how it is, the rules are very clear. You have a census every 10 years. The party in power at the end of the 10 years gets to draw the district.
But
and when I was in the minority, 42 of us in 78 Democrats, I didn't have much of a voice. Now, I remember Jack Hunt, wonderful rules chairman from Shelby, still living. He stands up, and the rules chairman, that controls everything, he said, I love everybody in this chamber, but I love some more than others. And that's a classic example. Again,
well back then, I was 11 back then, but back then.
I wasn't born back,
back
then.
Back then, that was. That even then, the Democrats, when they were in their majority, they would still make sure that there was a substantial number of districts that were reflective of the minority, and they gave Republicans seats on committees. Right now, because of the supermajority, Democrats are shut out. That's not good for either party, because imagine if things flip. It would hurt me, and I would come out and say to my Democrats, if you did the same thing Republicans are doing, shame.
Would it be fair... Would it be fair to say, Michael, that the Democrats, having been in the wilderness for, I don't know, 50, 100 years, mm-hmm. have participated in a little overreach?
I think that one could describe it in that manner. I think one could describe it as we are finally in power, so by God, we're going to use it.
Okay.
And they wanted to put their stamp on North Carolina.
Right.
And that is the power of governing. You get to enshrine, develop, create your vision of what society should be. That's the point of governance.
So if the supermajority is broken in the General Assembly, if Democrats take control of the United States House of Representatives, what message do Republicans take from that?
Sure.
Go ahead.
I think the message is people are fed up with politics as we see it today. Why can't we just get along? That's the message. It's a good question. I think we can. And to pay Wayne a little homage to his business about that, I was the first Republican to ever put an amendment on a Democrat appropriations bill in the minority. Now, they were all shocked. We were all shocked. But we can go back to those days when you were 11.
So Democrats have been thinking about getting back into power for years. I believe, at least in North Carolina, you have recruited 170 candidates. You've actually fielded candidates in all 170 legislative districts for the first time in what?
History.
In history. Mm-hmm.
For any party in this state.
So that means that, at least among Democrats, you people are raring to go. But if you don't take the supermajority, if you don't flip something, what message does that send you?
That we pick ourselves up, we dust ourselves off, and we live to fight another day. Because the next election starts the day after this one. And
isn't that part of the problem?
Well, no. Actually, I think it shows that this is an ongoing experiment. And further, the fact that we were able to recruit historic record numbers of women, persons of color, veterans, retirees, folks, educators, such a diverse slate of candidates, yeah. even in districts where you can look at the numbers and know that things are not going to turn out the way you'd want them to go, but people want to have a difference. They want to show that there's a contrast, give people a choice for the first time. That's a good thing. It should be a good thing for both parties. And I think that this is an opportunity for both parties to make themselves better.
Can I speak to that?
Sure.
He's right. But we did the same thing. The thing that I'm a little leery about, I think we need to have a little more emphasis, and we recruited record numbers of women, African Americans, Native Americans, across the board. But I want to see a little more emphasis on capability politics, not identity politics.
Okay. And that's identity politics is a phrase that Republicans use liberally, in small l liberally, to beat Democrats over the head with. But you have a record number of women running. I'd like to hear from Sarah about this. What would politics be like? Because women make up 51% at least of the population. What would politics be like if the representatives in our various bodies around the country had the same composition?
I think that going back to the idea of I like substance, I don't care how that person is, the person of substance and what they can bring to that elected position. I think that we get too far into the weeds on this identity politics. I am very thrilled. I am 100% backing all of our candidates. My job as the vice chair of the county party here is to support all of our candidates on the ballot in Mecklenburg County, and I'm very thrilled with that. I think that they bring a higher level of thought, of ideas, of diverse background, but I think that they bring strong ideas to what we get elected here. I think we get so far into the weeds of worrying about this identity politics, and I'm focused just on that local ballot of getting strong people elected.
At some point, though, identity politics also goes to the party. So in a nutshell, in a paragraph or two, tell me what Republicans bring to the table in North Carolina and or nationally that should be appealing to all voters.
What we are doing is this Carolina comeback. What we are doing is putting more money in your pocket. What we're doing is enacting these policies that are making this a business-friendly state so that people can come in here and move here. We're having at something like 115 millennials a day are moving to Charlotte. It's unbelievable. 1,000 people a day are moving here. So we are making policies that make us a business-friendly environment. And we are making policies that make individuals, households, be more viable and more substantial, and make us better than our parents' generation.
Same question, Wayne Goodwin. Give me your elevator speech for Democrats. What do you offer?
In addition to Democrats proposing and offering us being business friendly for small town North Carolina, we also want to be family friendly. That means having the strongest schools that we can. That means having the better roads, better bridges, clean air, clean water. I know folks talked about identity politics, but I think it says something when we are reaching out to have more women, more persons of color. Our party, the Democratic Party, is taking huge steps to go out and recruit more candidates that reflect North Carolina. And I commend the Republican Party for reaching out and doing more of the same. But I do worry that if one party or all parties don't do that, then it leads to more division. So Democratic Party of North Carolina is fighting for everybody, and particularly on pocketbook issues and kitchen table issues. And that's where, as I travel the state day in and day out, that's what we're talking about. We're not talking about Kavanaugh. We're not talking about all these other things. We're talking about who's going to help my family tomorrow and the next day.
Robin Hayes.
Classic example, the financial responsibility position of the Republican Party has gotten us out of debt and created a tremendous rainy day fund.
In North Carolina.
In North Carolina. I'm gonna get Mike Collins on my side one of these days.
I'm just pointing out the obvious.
Well, I missed it. We're talking about North Carolina. That was your entry.
Okay.
We have a huge rainy day fund. We had a horrible pair of hurricanes that needed to be dealt with. Had we not had those rainy day funds, we could not respond as well as we have. Now, Governor Cooper said no. We put too much money. But Governor Cooper has done a great job of working with the Republican legislature to meet the needs of North Carolinians.
And you get the last word. Robin Hayes, chair of the North Carolina GOP, along with Sarah Reedy Jones, vice chair of the Mecklenburg County GOP, Wayne Goodwin, chair of the North Carolina Democratic Party. Earlier, Connie Green Johnson was here, president of the Democratic Women of Mecklenburg County, and Dr. Michael Bitzer, chair of the Department of Politics at Catawba College. Thank you all. Charlotte Talks is sponsored by Mazda of South Charlotte, dedicated to helping customers select vehicles that fit one's lifestyle. More at MazdaofSouthCharlotte.com.